Are you ready to elevate your career with a professionally published book, but unsure where to start? I'm Lynn Aliquity-Smargis, and I work with thought leaders, executives, and speakers on how to write and self-publish their book with confidence. From conquering imposter syndrome to navigating book marketing, join me each week for practical wisdom and proven strategies, bringing you closer towards your goal of self-publishing success. Whether you're a CEO with revolutionary ideas or a speaker with an inspiring journey, the Publishing for Professionals podcast is your roadmap to becoming a published best-selling author. Present future authors, this is Lynn Aliquity-Smargis bringing you another episode of Publishing for Professionals. I'm excited to have another book blueprint guest. We've been having so many people that are looking to come on as a book blueprint guest to ask me their writing and publishing questions. I am really excited about my guest today. My guest today is Russell. Russell is he's a dyslexia learner. Almost 15 to 20% of all learners are dyslexias, but most families still hear wait and see. He likes to flip that script, and as a dyslexia professor, he translates structured literacy methods proven most effective for struggling readers into bite-sized actions parents can use. Your audience leaves knowing exactly why multisensory routines beat generic worksheets and how to start seeing progress before the next report card. And I have a lot of experience with this as being a parent of a dyslexic child who is now 26. So Russell, welcome to Publishing for Professionals.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm super excited to jump into today's book blueprint. I know you have a book, so you and your co-author, Evelyn Whitebay, have created a book. So just really briefly tell us the name of your book and what it's about, and then you can jump right into your first question.
Well, it's called Literacy and Reading Turnaround, and essentially it's about how I taught Kimberly, a mother, homeschooling mother of a 10-year-old dyslexic named Reed, and she increased brought him to grade level from beginning third grade level to grade level in little under 6 months. And she did this 11 times faster than what the public schools are capable of doing. And
that makes sense.
For the price. Just so everybody knows what's going on, this is Dyslexia. It's a book called Overcoming Dyslexia by Sally Shaywitz, page 78, figure 23. That's dyslexics. The back part of a typical brain has massive neuroactivity. The dyslexic has next to none. The front part's 2.5 times overactive. It's word analysis followed by articulation. I've extended that to two more areas, and that's why teaching the dyslexic the way our brain's designed, things are literally 5-10x more effective than traditional programs for a fraction of the price.
Yes, absolutely, because my daughter had that experience. She was going to a regular reading tutor, wasn't making really any progress, and then we actually put her in a program specific for dyslexia where we lived, and she was making much better progress, so that totally makes sense. So let's jump in. So I know you are in the process of publishing your book. What stage of publishing your book are you in right now?
We're in the process of, we're basically on the third draft. We're probably going to be another couple of months. But my main question is, once we do this, what I've done to set up, last month I was the number one guest on Podmatch. I've done 80 podcasts so far. I got another 75 scheduled. Just to lay a foundation. The question is, once it's published, and it's out there on Amazon, how do I then turn that into keynote talks? How do I turn that into getting this in front of PTAs? How do I turn this getting in front of school districts?
Okay, great questions. Okay, so keynote talks, PTAs, and school districts. Okay, awesome. And actually, yeah, I used to work as a school teacher, so I can definitely help you with this. First of all, what I would say is you want to start a good book marketing plan, at least ideally 3 months before you decide to publish your book. Because without a good book marketing plan, you're not going to generate buzz about your book. Since you're in the educational space, I would say definitely reaching out to, like, you know, first of all, your local school teachers or the local administration of the schools that are around you in New York, and then letting them know what you're doing, what problem your book solves, and then obviously case studies that go along with your book, and make that a one sheet. And that's going to be basically your sales pitch page to get in front of people. And I would say if you have any connections like on LinkedIn that are school district related, I would say go through LinkedIn and connect with those people ahead of time to say, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what I've got. But I would say start your marketing campaign first so people can go on your socials and see, yeah, Russell's doing, this is what Russell's doing. I can see what he's doing. Put your case studies on social. Those are really important and really powerful messages for people showing how your book is solving a problem. And then also, I would also suggest making like one big video with like questions and answers that your book solves, and then breaking that one big video down into short videos that you can just cut up and then put posts on social every day. And that way people get a constant stream of like what your book is, what it's about, and the problem that it solves, right? And then you're gonna start attracting the people who you know are interested in your book. I would also definitely follow school districts on social media, because going in through the social media route with school districts could be helpful too. Like you can message people directly on social. The other thing you can do as well, anybody you know that has a connection to a PTA, I would definitely talk to them about it. And or another idea that literally just popped into my head, PTAs love to do fundraisers. And then maybe talk to a PTA and say, hey, can we collaborate on a fundraiser? Like you guys say, hey, there's this book for sale. And then you give part of the profits to the PTA. And then they get to bring people in to have, gain more awareness of your book and also for book sales. So that's a win-win, because the PTA is going to make money. And it's not just you're coming to the PTA asking them for something. It's kind of like when like PTAs do Chick-fil-A nights, right? And like anybody who comes and says, hey, I want to donate part of my proceeds to the PTA, they automatically get that percent of sales. So you can do the same thing. Instead of Chick-fil-A night, it'll be Russ and Bram Brocken night and the dyslexic professor night. And so anybody who comes in to buy a book, you can give them a percent, and obviously you can work out whatever that number is. So, but I think that's good for not only, yes, you'll be making less on book sales, but I think that's really good PR for you, because A, you're donating to the PTA, and B, you're getting the word out about your dyslexia program and your book, which is really great for awareness and garnering awareness of your book. The other thing I would say for school districts is definitely get on LinkedIn and talk to admin. One of the things with school districts, I know from being in school districts for over a decade, is that they always make their budget for the next year. So right now would actually be a good time to talk to them about next year's budget, even though it's really early, because they're going to finalize that budget before spring. Most school districts do. So you want to get in and make sure that whatever program or that thing that you're pitching them is there. And also, you could even pitch school districts, like school districts need training. And so I'm sure this dyslexia training would be something good that a school district would love. So you can come in and say like, hey, if you buy like a copy of my book for every one of your teachers, I'll come in and do a training on dyslexia for them. Or even if it's like training just for the special ed teachers, right? So you want to create that value so that you can say, hey, I've got this book. This is my case studies. This is the proof that this process works. And I would like to come in and train your teachers. All you have to do is buy my book, buy a copy of my book for all your teachers that are in the training. Because if you're not charging them an outright fee, that's even better, because they're buying something tangible they can give to their teachers, or teachers can read, and then they're still getting the workshop. And that workshop too, obviously, there's going to be teachers that love your workshop, and they're going to talk to other teachers. I know, because teachers talk to teachers, especially when they're in these big, big, big district or state meetings. So the more teachers that know about your book, and the more teachers that have a positive experience with your book, better off you are in promoting it. And that will get you like farther in your promotion as far as the teaching side of it. Do you have any questions on that, Russell?
Nope, that's great so far. I really like the idea of the fundraiser for the PTAs.
That's a good way to get in. One of the things you want to keep in mind when you are book marketing is not just marketing your book, but also like thinking of it from the perspective of like, okay, if I'm marketing my book, what kind of like win-win situation can I put somebody in that they're going to want to say yes? What type of presentation or workshop can I do? That's another thing. Like you can offer maybe homeschool groups workshops on dyslexia with your book and say like, hey, if you guys buy like 10 copies of my book, I'll come in and do a workshop for free. So things like that are really good, and they're really effective because you're giving value, they're getting a book, and you're also coming in and talking to them about it. And then also, once you've done a workshop or a presentation or a training, always follow up with that whoever you did that with and say, hey, like, you know, make sure you give them a feedback form to see, like, you know, always, because you always want to improve what you're doing. And then say, hey, like, follow up with them like a week later. I'm really glad you love my presentation on dyslexia. What do you like? Is there another administrator do you think would be interested in having me come to their school and do the same program? Because administrators know other administrators, right? And they may know, even know people like across the state. So I would say always follow up with those people, even the homeschool groups, and say, hey, do you know another homeschool group that would benefit from this? And somebody might say, oh yeah, my friend Sally, she's in this homeschool group and her son Tommy has dyslexia. So always follow up and ask them, because that's an easy way to get another workshop or another you know, activity going with a similar group that's in the circle that's going to buy your book. So that's always really important. It's kind of hard to get to the school district at the school district level, but if you get, what I would say, end up building a really good relationship with a principal, that would be a good way to get an introduction to a school district. Depending on the principal, some principals have, you know, obviously better relationships than others with the school districts, but getting in with a principal or someone that's like a higher up in admin to introduce you to the school district, that would be great. I would say definitely do like 2 or 3 presentations at a school district before you do that, just so people know who you are, what you do. I wouldn't go and do that my first presentation, just because you don't have, like, people don't really know you after the first one. They may sort of know you, but if enough people start talking about Russell, the dyslexia professor, then it's going to start catching on. And then people will be like, oh yeah, I know Russell. That reputation will precede you. And then people will trust you because their friends trust you. And then they're more likely to bring you in for a workshop. Does that make sense?
What about trying to, well, this is the big goal, trying to go and, you know, all these educational events that they have, all the associations, trying to go and be starting off at the ground level and then moving up to being a keynote speaker. I've been teaching New York City private public school teachers for a decade. I'm trying to move up into the keynote position.
Oh, that's perfect. Actually, we're going to take a break right here. When we come back, I'm going to answer that question for you, Russell. So hang tight, my friends. We'll be back in just a couple minutes with Russell's question about becoming a keynote speaker with his book. Hey, friends and future authors. I know what it's like to sit at your desk staring at your manuscripts and wondering if you're the only person who feels alone when writing your book. That's why I created the Publishing for Professionals Virtual Writing Retreat, a sanctuary for leaders like you who are crafting books to elevate your thought leadership. Our writing retreat offers writing blocks, publishing support, and a place to share our resources and wisdom. Sign up today at www.writeforyou.me and click on events to register for this complimentary writing retreat today. Now let's get back to the show. Okay, we are back with Russell Van Brocklin, and he is the dyslexic professor, and Russell has a book that is coming out in a few months talking about dyslexia and how your child can make huge learning gains using his process. One of the things we were talked about right before the break is getting your book and learning how to do a keynote speech. So one of the things with keynote, it's really the topic, right? It needs to be something that's inspirational, something that's like going to drive people, that kind of thing. You can actually do that, but you want to build up. If you've already been speaking, the way to flip get doing from just general speaking gigs and workshops as keynotes is you definitely want to have a website. So like russellvanbrocklin.com, you can put it on your author website if you have one. You want an author website. You want to make sure that you have that set up, that you're speaking, like your speaking one sheet or information about speaking and your topics are on your website, so people know like what you do and what topics you can talk on. Make sure that you have your bio is really, you know, really well written and is on there as well, so people know about you, because that's the second thing people are going to look at, your about page. You also want to make sure that you are continuing to do the workshops, but then when you see South by Southwest EDU come up, or when you see any of the educational conferences come up, I would say start at the small ones in New York and then see if you can get a keynote there. And then once you get keynotes there, then work your way up to like the bigger ones that are maybe nationwide, like South by Southwest EDU. I definitely wouldn't just jump in and try an EDU. I mean, you can, and because it's just the application process to apply for a keynote. But typically I think the really, really big conferences like that have already picked people out for their conference. So I would say start with the smaller ones, try to grab keynotes in there. And then also the virtual conferences, any virtual educational conferences, those are great. Even if you don't get paid to speak, at least you don't have the expense of flying out somewhere to do that. So definitely check out like your local conferences, apply for those for keynote, apply for the virtual ones, and then see what comes up for you.
All right, that sounds good.
What other questions do you have about writing and publishing?
Once we get the book done, everybody seems to say push it towards Amazon Kindle. you know, that seems to be the main thing to selling things. Is that where it's at, or what's where's between Kindle, paperback, and hardcover?
So that's a great question. Thank you for asking that. So 80% of people buy their books on Amazon, right? So that doesn't mean you don't want to post it anywhere else, but I always recommend to my clients, if you're going to post it one place, post it on Amazon. And then I always recommend getting a author account on Goodreads. So once you're published, you can get an author account on Goodreads, because that really helps with like interacting with the people that are reading your book. And that helps with marketing. Ebooks are more popular than paperback books. I that actually blew my mind, because I love paperback. I'm a child of the 70s. I love just holding paper. I love using technology, but when I'm reading, I don't like reading books on my phone. I like listening to audiobooks. Most of your book sales will probably be ebooks. And they will probably be obviously to the parents of these children who are dyslexic. Mm-hmm. When you publish on Amazon, it's really easy to publish both an ebook and a paperback book and a hardcover book all at the same time. So, or the other thing you can do too is you can publish it in stages. So you can publish like the ebook first, and then if you want to publish the paperback like a month later, you can do that. And then publish the hardcover a month later, you can do that, because you can always add a different format onto your publication. I will say this, when you are publishing on Amazon, do not, especially because you're planning on being a speaker, you don't want to use the Amazon ISBN. And the reason is because the Amazon ISBN, when you use it, that limits you to only being able to sell your book on Amazon. Specifically, you cannot buy your own book and sell it when you're speaking. So like if you went to a conference, you had a keynote and you wanted to sell 100 books at your keynote or give them away or whatever, you wouldn't be able to buy them and sell them at the keynote if you use an Amazon ISBN, which is the free ISBN. So don't use the Amazon ISBN. I always recommend that my clients go on a website. It's called myidentifiers.com. And the company name is Bowker. It's Bowker. If you're going to do more than one book in your entire lifetime, I always recommend people buy 10. ISBNs. It's way more economical to buy 10. And plus you need one ISBN for each format. So you need one ISBN for your ebook, one ISBN for your print book, one ISBN for your hardcover, one ISBN for your audiobook. So right there, if you got one book with four formats, you've already used four of your 10 ISBNs. I just ran out of mine. I need to buy a new pack again. They also come in 100, which I am contemplating on buying because I publish so many books. So it just depends on. But yeah, definitely get your own ISBN, because then you can sell it even on your website, or sell it, you know, when you're in a speaking gig. But you want that because you want that control over your book. There's another piece to that too, which is the barcode. So the barcode you can also buy on Bowker's, which is the myidentifiers.com website. And the barcode is specifically for if you're selling your book like in specialty stores, or you're selling your book at Barnes & Noble, or you're selling your book literally anywhere, they're going to scan it with scanner to sell it. But not, you don't need one for Amazon. But if you plan on selling it in stores, you also want to buy the barcodes to put on your book so that it has a barcode along with your ISBN. And when you're designing your cover, you need to take that into consideration. So if you plan on doing a barcode at the bottom of your cover, you'll need a bigger, on the back cover, you'll need about 1.5 inches space on the bottom where you don't have anything. Amazon can put your ISBN on the back cover, and then also you can put your barcode on the back cover as well without having it like overlap on your back cover words.
A question about who should do my foreword. I'm doing an edition for parents, an edition for teachers. Ideally, is the type of person to do the forward for the parents, and who's ideally the type of person for doing it for
teachers?
Yes.
So, that's a good question. I don't think you'd have. I mean, if you can find somebody who the parents and teachers would recognize, that would be great. Because if you're not making a separate book for parents and a separate book for teachers, I would say, perfect.
They have to be separated.
Okay, gotcha, perfect. Okay, that's awesome. Okay, so if you're doing one book for teachers, I would say somebody in the teaching space who is seen as the expert on dyslexia or the expert on special ed. So if you can find somebody or you know somebody who does that, I would say that would be a good person. I have been out of teaching for a while, so I wouldn't know like a specific name to drop. Mm-hmm. But I would say someone in this space who people would recognize as a special education, like guru, right? Or a dyslexia guru. Mm-hmm. So I would say someone like that would be great for your forward. And for parents, I would say if you know like I know there's like a National Dyslexia Association. If there's a parent in there that's like on the board or is president of that association, that would be a great person to do a forward. And how I would recommend it is that, you know, contact them through LinkedIn or however you're contacting them and say, hi, my name is Russell. I'm dyslexic. My platform is The Dyslexic Professor. This is what my book is about. I'm coming out with two versions, one for parents, one for educators. And I would really love for you to write the forward as an educator or as a, you know, as a parent of a dyslexic kid. You obviously, you'd have to send them a manuscript of your book. Now, you can send them a rough draft that's not edited. Just when you send it, say, this is the rough draft and it has not been edited professionally, but I wanted to give you the book as an idea of like, what, you know, what you would be writing about, what my book's about, so you know how to write the foreword.
Okay, because my co-author knows those people. Cool. Lastly, when it comes to blurbs, I've been invited back on over 50 podcasts.
Awesome.
A lot of them dealing with parents and teachers. Is there a thing of too many blurbs on your book?
No. You mean as far as other people writing them?
No. Like, you know how you could go on a well-written book and there's like all these important people that wrote a sentence or two? What's the limit you want to place on that?
I would say if you're doing it on the back cover, no more than three. One of the things I've seen somebody do, actually, I think the book is right here. So I picked up this book and I think, yeah. So this, for those of you who are on audio, this book is called Mind Your Body. It's from Nicole Sachs and it's called A Revolutionary Program to Release Chronic Pain and Anxiety. So what Nicole Sachs actually did is in the beginning of her book, she had, I think 12 blurbs from all these different professionals talking about, you know, her book and everything. So she's got a section that says praise for your mind and body. So this is an option you could do, Russell, whereas like you could put a couple on the back cover, like two or three on the back cover, like she actually has more on her back cover. Do the praise section on the inside. So if you get a lot of blurbs, you can just put them on the inside as well so that it doesn't take up a lot of space on your back cover. Because on your back cover, one of the things she did not do that I recommend new authors do, and she's not a new author, you want to have a section with like your little bio with your picture. And another thing I always recommend for my authors is when you're doing the back cover, you need a spot for your, this is actually on here, it's got a barcode and an ISBN, but you also want a spot for your QR code on your back cover. And are you familiar with QR codes, Russell?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So one of the QR codes I use is called Linktree. And so it's basically a QR code that I can change my links on. And so a QR code is great because if someone's like, you know, someone sees your book on Amazon and they're looking at the cover, they can scan your QR code with their phone if they're watching, looking on their laptop, and they can go right to like whatever you're offering, if that's a freebie, things like that. So I would definitely recommend putting your QR code on the back cover as well as a couple blurbs. And then, you know, a picture of you with what you do and kind of like a short bio, because the back cover is like the gold real estate of your book cover. So you want to make sure this really purveys like what your book solves and then a little bit about you and also your QR code.
Yes, but how many blurbs should I limit in the inside cover?
Well, the inside, so she has 12. And honestly, on the inside, if you're just doing it on the pages, like you know, you have your foreword and your introduction, and then she has a spot that says praise for the book, I say no more than 15, because if you go more than 15, it kind of gets a little overdone. Maybe 12. So I think she has 12 in the front of her book, which is like three pages. And I think three pages is great because it gives you more information on why people like the book. But three pages doesn't seem overdone. Of course, it obviously, you know, your typeset and font size and things like that. But yeah, I would say 12 on the inside and maybe three on the outside cover max.
Okay. Well, I have a co-author, so the back cover, I think, is going to be pretty much taken up with that.
Gotcha. Yeah, and you can put both your pictures on there. Like, obviously, you can put, I've seen people do, like, one co-author on the top and one on the bottom. Like, well, they're both on the bottom, but kind of staggered. So you can do that as well, because you want both of your pictures on the back with your information so people can see what, like, because people always want to know more about the author, right? So make sure both of your information's on the back. Was all the other information you got today helpful, Russell?
Oh yeah, it was extremely helpful. The main idea, because of the back cut, because of that type of printing, we need to hand out hard covers to people that really matter. And Amazon for 108 pages, it's $6.80 for hardcover without the dust jacket. The page is a penny and a half. So it's just affordable. You had a dust jacket, and wow, and politicians will lose the dust jacket. I'm told that all the time.
Yeah, dust jackets are expensive. There's certain things in publishing when you're actually printing your book that make the jack the price up, like quality color, dust jackets, and a few other things. Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Well, I'm so glad you came on today, Russell. Tell my audience, if they're interested, where they can find out more about you and your author website, if you have one, and or your current website.
You can just find me at dyslexiaclasses.com. It's Russell. Just go to dyslexiaclassesplural.com. And if you want to know more about how we help parents overcome their problems, there's a button there that says download free report. Click on it, ask a few questions, and you can set up a half an hour appointment with me where I can walk you through what we do with your child.
Awesome. Sounds great. I know. I wish I had your resource when my youngest daughter was little, because yeah, we struggled a lot with her dyslexia. She ended up coming out okay, but wow, it's definitely not an easy path. So thank you so much for coming on today, Russell. I really appreciate it. And remember, my friends, make sure that you are starting to write your book today, because if you don't write your book today, someone won't be able to glean your knowledge tomorrow. Make sure to like and subscribe to the Publishing for Professionals podcast on whatever platform you're watching or listening to this on, and I will see you next week. Thanks for joining me today on the Publishing for Professionals podcast. I really hope this episode has equipped you with an actionable strategy for your publishing journey. If you found the information on today's show valuable, make sure to rate and leave a review for my show on your favorite podcast player. And also subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and get the next episode dropped as soon as it's published. Until next week, this is Lynn Aliquity reminding you to keep writing, keep dreaming, and keep creating. Your book is waiting to be born. This podcast is brought to you by Unicorn Publishing Company. The information in this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The content shared by the host, guests, and affiliates is not intended to substitute for professional, legal, or financial advice, or any professional advice specific to your situation. Always seek the advice of a qualified professional with any questions you may have. The opinions expressed on the show by the host or guests are those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of Unicorn Publishing Company. Unicorn Publishing Company, the host, guests, and affiliates are not responsible or liable for any decisions made by listeners or actions taken hereto based on the information discussed in this podcast. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge and agree to release Unicorn Publishing Company, the host, affiliates, and guests from any liability.